Okay, so we thank Jonathan Grossman for lending us his MP3 recorder. And we thank the Aaron, Martha, Isidore, Ann, and Blanche Rosansky Contemporary Halacha Program for sponsoring tonight's shiur. What we've been doing this semester is going through topics. We began with topics in Choshen Mishpat, and now we are moving on to topics in Evan HaEzer.
Which you have already.
Yeah, we have already. Yes, now we've got topics in Evan HaEzer. And if I'm not mistaken, last time we went through Rabbi Sabalovsky's shiur on Yichud, and we went through Rabbi Blau's shiur on prenuptial agreements, and also Rabbi Brander's shiur on Tznius. And we're going slightly out of order just because that's the way things work, but now we'll go back to Rabbi Yonah Reis's shiur on the value of a ksuba. Now, the value of a ksuba begins with the discussion whether the din of a ksuba is at a din d'oraisa or is at a din d'rabbanan. And of course, this issue comes up in the Torah because the pasuk says "Kesef yishkal kemohar habasulos," that if you rape a young woman, you have to pay kemohar habasulos. What is mohar habasulos? The Rashi tells us that what that means is you have to pay for a ksuba. Apparently, according to Rashi, din ksuba is a din d'oraisa, but the Ramban of HaTorah disagrees, and the Ramban says that no, there's no such thing as ksuba being a din d'oraisa. The Gemara in a million places, actually it's probably five or six places, but the Gemara in Ksubos and in Yevamos, the Gemara says that the din of Ksuba is Maitai Matakinu Le Rabbanan Ksuba. How can the Rabbanan institute a Ksuba? It's a din's Rabbanan. So, the Ramban asks on Rashi, you can't tell me that Ksuba is a din Do'i Ra'isa. Good. Now, halacha l'maisa, whether or not ksuba is din d'oraisa, is in machlokas hatanoim. It's machlokas rishim begamliel lechachamim. And there's also some discussion in Rishonim about this, because you see, in our ksuba that we have, and we have a standard form of ksuba, is that everyone who's not married shem yotz shem get married and use, and if you are married, you probably already have one, right? So in the ksuba, we say that if you marry a basula, you say d'chazu laichi mida oraisa. So frektosis in meseches ksubis, how can you say the Lashon Chazal Leithi Doi Raisa? Don't we paskin that Ksuba is only Midrabanon? Taisus is Kasha. So Taisus gives an answer that Samchina Narashbag, whatever that means, that this line in the Ksuba follows the Shita, which is the rejected Shita LaHalacha, the Shita of Rishim Gamliel. And the Ran, Taka, says that you know what, you shouldn't write in your Ksuba Chazal Leithi Midra Oraisa. But comes along the Rush, and the Rush has a chiddush. The Rush says that no, you know why you write Chazul Leichim Mido Oraisa, and this is the beginning in effect of the Shear. The reason you have to write Chazul Leichim Mido Oraisa is because there are two types of money in this world. There's the Torah money, right? In Kedushin, this comes up on Daf Yud Beis Ko Kesef HaAmar B'Torah is Kesef Tzuri Shadavim Kesef Medina. Kesef Tzuri is worth eight times more than Kesef Medina. So Zuck the Rush, even though the Takon of Ksuba is a Din Zerabanan, and the reason for the Din Zerabanan is Shalotei Kala V'Einav Lotzeo, it shouldn't be too easy to get divorced, but the payment of the Ksuba is going to be in Kesef Do'i Ra'isa. The payment is going to be in Torah money. Beseder. The question is, do you pay in Torah money only on the basula about whom you write Chazal Eichim Mido Oraisa? Our minhag, the Ramah says, is that on the ksuba of an almana, we do not say Chazal Eichim Mido Oraisa. So on the ksuba of an almana, do you pay also with Kesef Tzuri, which is eight times more than Kesef Medina? Again, this is only for Ashkenazim. Sfaradi Rabbanim are always going to paskin that you pay the lower amount, the money that's eight times less than what we pay. But for Ashkenazim, for a basula, you pay Kesef Tzuri. What about an almana? Do you pay, right, the ksuba of a basula is 200 zuz. The ksuba of an almana is 100. So the shaila is the ksuba of almana half the value of the ksuba of a basula? In other words, that the ksuba of a basula is 200 Kesef Tzuri. So the ksuba of an almana is going to be 100 Kesef Tzuri. That's half of it. Right? That is the position of the Beis Shmuel. Comes along Rabbi Akiva Eger and he disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Eger says that no, the value of the Almana's Ksuba is actually going to be evaluated in Kesef Medina, which means that's going to be, right, math majors, right? It's going to be half of it in terms of face value, 100 zuz instead of 200 zuz, but ends up being a 16th of the value because Kesef Medina is an eighth less than Kesef Tzuri. Good. Now, so, Lamaisa, this is one issue which is not fully resolved, which will, of course, complicate matters in terms of evaluating the ksuba, the difference between a basula and Almana and the difference between Rebbe Kiva Eger and the Beis Shmuel, whether it's Kesef Tzuri or Kesef Medina. There's a few other issues that are going to be unresolved, and we'll leave them unresolved. The next issue is the Chazon Ish has a comment that all money is based on silver, but silver in Talmudic times was pure silver. Today our silver is an alloy, it's around 84% silver. So the Chazon Ish has a chiddush. He thinks that you have to add on 16% to the value of whatever it calculates. Rabbi Reese commented that in his impression is that none of the Batei Din who evaluate the value of a ksuba take this Chazon Ish into account. I'm not exactly sure why not, but they don't seem to be using the Chazon Ish at all. To say there, but that's another issue to keep in mind. But what are the central issues here? So the central issue is, we have in the ksuba what we call, there are two things in the ksuba. We have the Iker ksuba and we have Tosefes ksuba. Right? The Iker ksuba is, let's talk about for a basula, in most cases, 200 zuz. Now, what is 200 zuz? That's the first question we have to figure out. So, we know that a zuz is the same as a dinar. A dinar is a coin that they use ad hayom azeh in Jordan. Right? The Jordanian currency, the Jordanian dinar. It's a common coin. Okay, fine. So a zuz is the same as a dinar. There are 4 dinar in a shekel. Now, mathematically, what that means is if I have 200 zuz, so 200 zuz would be how many shekelim? 50 shekelim. Right? Now, pidyon haben is 5 shekel. We know the value of pidyon haben. The value of pidyon haben is 96 grams of silver. So, 96 grams of silver equals roughly $30. 10 times that is the value of your ikker ksuba, and that would be, how much? $300. So ksuba, right, is $300. Problem. The din of a ksuba is instituted, shelo tehei, right? It shouldn't be easy to get divorced. We want to add an impediment. Is $300 going to be an impediment to divorce? Not so likely, right? Okay. So that issue, and even if you take the bigger share for pidyon haben, it's 101 grams of silver, so you're up to what, $32 instead of $30. L'maisa sachakol, right? It's still not an impediment to divorce. But there are other issues that come up. You see, because in the ksuba that we have are standard Ashkenazi ksubas, so we write that this is the nedunya that she brought in from her home. V'dein nedunya dan ha'alas leithi. And that nedunya we estimate as being 100 zakukim. V'hosef la min delay, utzavi, so-and-so, chasandanan, v'hosef la min delay, he desired, he's really excited about getting married, so he added on another 100 zakukim kesef. What's a zakuk? We have no idea. Okay? A zuz we could figure out, and the value of the zuzim in the ksuba is going to be around $300. But zakukim, we're totally at a loss. We don't know exactly what zakukim are. We're so totally at a loss that there are probably 5 or 6 different shitos that we can put together. In this Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society, Volume 47, there is the English version of Rabbi Reese's Shir. If you guys want a quick summary, it's kedai to read it. I also have an article in here on a different topic, so it's a good journal to have. Now, the basic shitos that emerge vary. Reb Moshe Feinstein assumed that 200 zakukim equals 100 pounds of silver, whatever that's worth. Reb Moshe's calculation is very difficult. Reb Schechter points out the Sefer Bikvei Etzon, I don't have a head for math, without getting into the details, it's a difficult calculation. The calculation that makes a little more sense is the Chazon Ish's calculation, 127 pounds of silver. Now, 127 pounds of silver is going to be worth around $10,000. Other shiurim, now, is that shalotei kala ve'enav lahotzia? Well, we're getting closer. It's better than $300, but lamaisa, it doesn't really contribute all that much. There are other shiurim that are even smaller. Reb Chaim Noe, right? He's famous for the small shiurim. So if you have to eat a third of a machine matzah, so the ksuba is going to be 8.5 pounds of silver. Okay, 8.5 pounds of silver. So we're talking $600. Well, that's really shalotei kalabein of Valencia. And there's another sheet, another shear of the Nachla Shiva. That was like the standard sefer in Shtaros, even smaller, around these areas. Right? So you have a variety of different positions. Not clear. How do you paskin? We don't know. Just to add a wrench, the Mishnah in Peya, right? The Mishnah in Peya says about the original shear, about the 200 zuz shear, the original ksuba, the ikar ksuba, the Mishnah in Peya in Parakhet says that that's the amount of money to support a person for a year. So presumably, and many posts given Eretz Yisrael today want to use this. They want to assume that a ksuba, right? Fine, so it used to be 200 zuz and 200 zakukim was added to that, but the idea is to get it to how much money people need to live for a year. But how much money is that? 60,000, 80,000, depending where you live. Right? That's really a serious impediment to divorce. So halacha l'maisa, how do you paskin? Right? You have all these different shittos. You have a document that's really unclear. How do you paskin? So this was a case that came up in one of the Piskei Din, Dinim Rabbanayim. And Reb Ovadia Yosef and Rav Yosef Kapach sat on this Bezdin, and they both paskin Yad Bal Hashtar Al HaTachtona. That means that a ksuba is only enforceable to the value of Reb Chaim Noz Shir, $600. That's it. There's some discussion, Rabbi Reese points out in his Hebrew article, which is in the packet, that it could be that you don't say Yad Bal Hashtar Al HaTachtona on a shtar that is done unilaterally. Right? It could be the principle Yad Bal Hashtar Tachtona, because the Gochan has in the Tshuva is only if it's a shtar that two people enter. Okay, so that's a wrench. But Chacham Ovadia and Rav Kafach Paskin Yad Bal Hashtar Tachtona. So that means that the ksuba is worth what? According to the 200 zakukim is around $600. The 200 zuzim is around $300. So then we have a serious question that you have to ask when you have the 200 zakukim. Is that including 200 zuhuvim, 200 zuzim, or is 200 zakukim going to be in addition to the 200 zuzim? That's 2 days in the Beis Shmuel. But Sach HaKol, according to Chacham Ovadia Yosef, Al Tzad HaYoser, you have a ksuba that's worth $1,000. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was the third dayan on this case. He issued a dissenting opinion. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu felt that the ksuba should follow the Chazon Ish's shear roughly. Now, Lamaisa, right, according to Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, so ksuba is going to be, what, $10,000 in America? Still not that much. The minigim, some bati dinim in New York, and it's hard to say a minhag here, because evaluation of the ksuba doesn't come up all that often. In fact, it almost never comes up. Why does it never come up? Because in cases of divorce, right, so the last question you ask someone when he gives a get to his wife is, the last question you ask the wife, you ask questions to the husband and to the wife in the get proceeding. The last question you ask the wife is, do you forgo your rights to the ksuba? And inevitably, they're going to say yes. So they do not collect the ksuba. Instead of collecting the ksuba, they opt for the state's payments, right? That she's entitled to alimony, she's entitled to support, whatever the issues are. So, b'derech klal, the ksuba is not enforceable. Therefore, almost no one knows the value of a ksuba. Push comes to shove, the value of a ksuba, unless you know for sure that there's a minhag to follow either the shear of Reb Moshe and the Chazon Ish around 100 pounds of silver, 127 pounds of silver, or unless you know for sure there's a minhag like this Rav Libis, he was the Rav in the Bronx, he felt that the shear of a ksuba should be the value of support for a year, but unless you for sure have a minhag, you'd say Yad Bal Hashtar Al HaTachtona, then Lamaisa, the ksuba would not be worth all that much money. Interestingly, there is one tshuva in Igris Moshe that Reb Moshe himself writes that the value of a ksuba is the amount that it takes to support a person for a year. So they ask Astir, but Reb Moshe, you yourself said it's 100 pounds of silver, Astir and Reb Moshe. So Rabbi Breud points out, Rabbi Reis, they wrote the article together. Rabbi Reis gave the shir to us. Rabbi Reis points out that no, it's not a stira. See, in the late 70s, early 80s, there were people called the Hunt Brothers, and they cornered the market on silver in the United States. And the price of silver, which now is around $4 an ounce, then was $40 an ounce. So what emerged at that time is that if you would make a cheshbon based on the price of silver, it would be more than the amount of support for a year. So Reb Moshe held that you get either support for a year or the price of silver. Either one. Right? You're not going to get the price of silver if that exceeds the value for a year. That's the way Rabbi Reis understands. That's why he answers the stira in Igris Moshe. In Eretz Yisrael today, the minig is that they write a shekel amount in ksubas. Bederach Klal, they don't use our standard ksubas, so these issues don't come up. In Eretz Yisrael, however, you should be careful. Rabbi Reis noted in his shir that you shouldn't add an exorbitant, strange 19 billion shkolem, the amount of, some people try to do gematrias or stuff, right? The gematria of all the times it says my name in the Torah, whatever, something like that. You shouldn't do that. It just creates problems. You have to divide stuff equitably. Basically, court cases have upheld the value of a ksuba technically, but lamaisa, push comes to shove, if you'd have to paskin a shayla on a ksuba, you would paskin that it would be around $1,000 lamaisa if you accept the chumradeya, right? $1,000 if you hold like that opinion. The Beis Shmuel, that's 200 zakukim in addition to 200 zuzim. Good. Are there any questions on... Oh, there's one other ha'ara that's very important that Rabbi Reis mentioned. What's the reason for ksuba? Right? Ksuba's d'rabbanan mechora. D'raisa, so we have the Rush's line, it's only for the type of money that you pay. So what's the reason for ksuba? Shelo tehe kala ve'einav lahotzia. Bizman hazeh, this should have no meaning. Because bizman hazeh, after chirim of Rabbeinu Gershom, you can't divorce your wife bal karcha. So it's never going to be kala ve'einav lahotzia. So the Ramah has a deya that you do not need a ksuba bizman hazeh. Rabbi Reis mentioned, halacha lamaisa, that in cases, let's say that you lose a ksuba, right, so the couples get very nervous, the ksuba is missing, and in the middle of the night they'll go and they'll try to write a ksuba to Irkasa. Rabbi Reis felt that you could rely on this sheet of the Ramah, even though the Chokas Mechokik and the Beishmo are uncomfortable with it, but you can rely on this sheet of the Ramah, halacha lamaisa, that you don't need a ksuba if, right, you don't need a ksuba bisman hazeh. So in a b'diavad situation, it's a good thing to have up your sleeve. Are there any other questions? Any questions? You should say it like that, yeah.
Is that how most people pass on nowadays? That if there was the ksuba, they'll still be together?
No. Rabbi Bleich will tell you in fourth year halacha l'maisa is that you should do what the Ramah says in Simon Samach Vav Sif Gimel. If you lose the ksuba, you should take your gold watch or something that's worth the value of a ksuba, and that's why you have to know the value of a ksuba, and you should give it to your wife to hold on to as a pikadon. Until I have a new ksuba written for you, this is going to be yours. And that could help the makom that there's no ksuba. That's an important... But Rabbi Reis Lamaisa Paskins, I think he Paskins Halacha Lamaisa, if you lose the ksuba, you're okay. Okay. The next shir that we got into, which turned out to be a little more complicated than I thought it would be, is the shir about child custody. Did any of you see a Rambam in Hilchos Ishus around? No? So, child custody. Child custody is a topic that Batei Din can deal with. Many of these topics Batei Din don't deal with at all. The value of a ksuba, but they didn't almost never deal with the value of a ksuba. Child custody cases, if the couple agrees then the Beis Din will arbitrate. Thank you. If the couple agrees that the Beis Din will arbitrate cases of child custody, so then you're allowed to deal with cases of child custody. Now, what are the rules of child custody? Child custody is different than child support. There are two issues. Child support means that you pay for the kid. Child custody means who holds on to the kid. Does the kid stay by the father? Does the kid stay by the mother? What's the halacha say about child custody? So the Rambam in Perek Chof Aleph of Hilchos Ishos codifies for us, and this is in Eben Ha'ezer Simen Pei Beis, and these are Gemaras and Ksubos, Daf Kuf Gimel. The Rambam tells us that little kids, and while the kids are nursing, so obviously the kids are going to be by the mother. That's obvious. Perkof Aleph of Ishus Halacha Yud Zayin. While she's nursing, the kids are with the mother. Sholmu Chadosha Vigom Laso. If the amount of months that you usually nurse are completed, right, the time the Gemara says is 24 months, and then Gom Laso, you wean the kid. Imratzisa HaMegureshes Sheyiyah Binna Etzla. Ein Mafrishin Oso Mimena Ad Sheyiyah Ben Sheishanim Gemuros. If the woman wants the son, the boy, so you don't remove the boy from the woman until the kid is 6 years old. Ella kofenes aviv v'nosim lo mizonos v'hu eitzel imo. But rather what you do is you force the father, and the father will feed the kid while the kid stays by the mother. Father will feed the son, he'll pay for the mizonos for the son while the son is by the mother. Achar sheishanim yesh la'av lomar imhu etzli etein lo mizonos v'imhu eitzel imo lo etein lo mizonos. After the kid is 6 years old, the father could give his former wife a choice. Either I have the kid or I'm not going to pay for his food anymore. V'habas eitzel imo la'olam afilu la'achar sheish. A daughter stays by the mother forever even after six. So there's a cutoff of 6 years. What's the lumdus of this cutoff of 6 years? Where do you get it from? So there's a machlokes harishonim. The Ravid has a comment here that the Ravid says, I don't understand. Presumably the din of six is a chi of enchinuch. That the father can say at 6 years old, I want my son to be by me, because the father wants to be mechanech him. Therefore, the rabbi says, if it's based on chinuch, so I don't understand, because why does chinuch start at six? Chinuch should start at four or five. So the rabbi has a hasag on the Rambam. He says, no, halohu chayiv l'chanecho b'torah ben arba ben chamesh. V'hu gadol ben hanoshim. How can you do chinuch to the kid when he's growing up by the wife? So for the Ravid, and the Ravid is not quoted lahalacha, the defining aspect of child custody is chinuch. Right? The Ravid understood that the Rambam is saying that the cutoff of six is based on chinuch, and the Ravid says, hold it. 6 years old isn't a significant age for chinuch. You should push it back. But the defining aspect of child custody is, where will the kid get the best chinuch? Of course, if we would accept the Ravid, which we don't, right? La halacha, it's not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, but some of the Batei Dinim in complicated cases have used it. So you get involved in questions, well, what does chinuch mean? Does chinuch mean Torah chinuch? That's what I would have thought intuitively. But one could argue that maybe chinuch means the best education for the person to develop as a normal person. If the father's an Erlich Yid, but he's a raging lunatic, and the mother is a sane, stable, non-Orthodox Jew, right? So many Batei Din have argued that it's preferable to be by the mother. Why? Mitzad chinuch. What do you mean chinuch? No, the answer is that chinuch might not mean, right, only Torah chinuch. So that's one sheet of the age of six that's based on chinuch. Not clear. The other sheet of where six comes in The other shita of where six comes in is not really explicitly stated by any Rishonim on the Rambam, but it is explicit in the tshuva of the Rashba. It's a tshuva sam yuchasos la Ramban. It's in the Rabbi, it's in the Dr. Warburg packet on page 19, where the Rashba writes, La'olam tzarech ledaktik b'chlal ledvarim elu, achar ma'ashayira be'enei bezdin. You have to be very careful, and the bezdin has to investigate what it appears to them. B'chol makom u'makom, sheyish bo yosir tikun liyisomim, shebezdin avihim shol yisomim lachzar achar tikunam. Comes along the Ramban, the Rashba, whoever wrote the Tshuvos HaMiyuchasos, and he says, the criteria is, what is the best interest of the child? Bezin is avihan shal yisomim. Bezin has to determine according to what is in the child's best interest. New York state law, and most state laws, will decide child custody based on the best interest of the child. Dr. Warburg, who gave the shir to us, has written extensively in a few places that halacha follows this position of the tshuvos hamyuchasos. It's not really clear in Shulchan Aruch. It's not clear. What's the lumdus here? Right? If the lumdus is best interest for the child, so obviously you have to bring in child psychologists, you have to bring in people to make a determination. And what you're basically saying is that all the rules in the Gemara aren't hard rules. When the Gemara gives us a rule, habas la'olam eitzel ima, and that's how the Rambam paskins. But it doesn't mean habas la'olam meitzo ima, like it's a halacha, like bishalakum is a halacha. Habas la'olam meitzo ima is that there's a presumption that it's better, it's in the best interest of the daughter to be with the mother. But if I know that the mother in this case is a raging lunatic, and the father's the same guy, so it goes to the father. And if I know that's the best interest of the child to be neither with the mother nor with the father, but it's the best interest of the child maybe to be with a grandparent, an uncle, an aunt, a third party. Both the parents are raging lunatics. These things happen, right? Matzah min esminai. Right? So then, b'kahai gafna, the child could go to somewhere else. Best interest of the child prevails. This is when a bezdin will paskin on a child custody case, which they can do. Rabbi Michael Broyd points out in the RJJ Journal, Volume 37, that any psak that is not based on best interest of the child will probably be overturned by the court. So this entire halachic discussion, is the lumdus over here best interest of the child, or is the lumdus, as other people say, we didn't even mention it fully, that parents have some ownership over the children, and parents have rights to have the children be with them. Rabbi Broyd assumes that this is a position of the Rush. If that's the pshat, right, so the court will overturn it. Lamaisa, what Dr. Warburg concluded in his shir, which is, I think, the standard practice in Bati Din, is that they decide child custody in line of the best interest. If you want a Mara Makom on that, it's this Tshuvos HaMiyuchasos, page 19 in the packet, the Simen, Simen Lamed Ches. That's the Makar, that's where it all comes from.
Doesn't Rashi say that 6 or 7?
Yeah. What? Right. I mean, but there are different levels, there are different ages of chinuch. Chinuch for what? Right. Every mitzvah there's a different type of chinuch. We learn sukkah. It's very hard to know. To come up with a firm rule that chinuch begins at 6, right? The Ravid over here is obviously saying that right. It starts much earlier. The Rambam makes a difference between boys and girls, right? Girls are always supposed to be with the mother, and boys, we have this cutoff of 6. The Ravid apparently assumes a chinuch, by the way, this is also interesting in Lomdus, a chinuch is only for boys, not for girls. Right? The Ravid's hasug is only on the Rambam's comment of the boy till the age of 6. He says, boys, you should push back. He doesn't argue that the daughter should always be with the father, al chinuch. Right? That's a sugya elsewhere in Chas and Nazir and Sukkah. Yeah, there's a huge discussion about who the mitzvah of chinuch is on. This Ravid is not usually quoted in that discussion, but he's clearly taking up a stand. I don't think there's much more to say on the issue of child support. Lamaisa, there are other issues of schar limud, who has to pay. Schar limud me'ikar hadin only has to be paid until the kid is 6 years old. After, some say that bizman hazeh, we push it up till the age of 13. Okay, so till 13 you have to pay schar limud. After the kid is 13, a parent is only obligated to pay a kid schar limud b'toyras staka. What that means is that if the parent can't afford it, he's not mechuyev. That's very important. Right? That's b'feirush in the Rambam also, in Perkof Aleph Halacha Yud Ches, in terms of Parnasa, in terms of Schar Limud. These are issues that keep on coming up. Any other questions? Any questions? Okay, let's move on to Rabbi Ganek's Shi'urim on Bishul Akum. There were two Shi'urim that Rabbi Ganek gave on Bishul Akum, and just to remind you again, that for Bishul Akum you really should learn Simon Kuf Yud Beis and Kuf Yud Gimel, the Simon Mepas Akum and Bishul Akum. I'm only going to ask questions on the Mechaber Ramah, but obviously to understand Mechaber Ramah you have to be familiar with some of the Mefarshim. Take a glance at the Shach occasionally. It's good stuff, it's interesting. Try to learn it in time for the exam. What's the reason for the Isser of Bishul Akum? Like Bishul Akum, as Rabbi Rapp always used to point out in Moreh HaKolel, does not mean that whether you're allowed to cook a goy and eat him, right? That's a sugya of cannibalism. Bishul Akum means, can a goy cook, right? Now, what is the reason for the Isser of Jews eating food that a goy cooks? There's a stir in Rashi's. Tosis points out in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamech Chesam Aleph, Tav Tosis points out, but there's a steer in Rashi's. Rashi on Lamed Ches says that the reason for Bishul Akum is Rabbanan Gazer Shema Yachilenu Davar Tamei. It's a Gezeret Rabbanan. Maybe the guy will give you non-kosher food. However, Rashi in the Mishnah earlier, Chavtes, Rashi says over there that the Isser of Bishul Akum is based on Chasnus, that we're concerned that a Jew will marry the daughter of the non-Jew who can cook such wonderful Mama Luigi's pasta, or whatever it is. So there's a concern that you marry the daughter, so it's an Isser Chasnus. So there's a steer in Rashi's. Right? Good to know, just background information. Next thing that's important for background information is the sheet of the Ravid. The Ravid, now, whether or not this is our Ravid is some question. Tosfos quotes the Ravid on Daf Lamed Chesin Avodah Zarah. Now, the Ravid says that the Isser Bishul Akum is not applicable but based on Shal Yisrael. In the Jew's home, there's no Isser Bishul Akum. Now, Rabbi Ganech thought that the Pashtus in the Ravid is why would there be no Bishul Akum based on Shal Yisrael? Because if the Isser Bishul Akum is only Shema Yachilenu Dover Tamei, do you have Dover Tamei in the Jew's home? L'chor or not, right? L'chor your pantry is full of kosher food, not non-kosher food. So if it's based on Shema Yachilenu Dover Tamei, so it wouldn't apply. Rabbi Ganek suggested that even Rabbi Nutam, who argues on the Ravid, Rabbi Nutam argues based on the low plug. Beinotam's argument is that Chazal weren't machalik, that the Isser Bishul Akum applies whether it's Beis Oshe Yisrael or Beis Oshe Akum, there's an Isser Bishul Akum. But fundamentally, also, Rabbi Beinotam might agree that the Isser Bishul Akum is based on Shema Yachilanu Dover Tamei. That's the way Rabbi Ganek said it. Lamais, I think if you guys would read the Tosis inside, there's good room to question the slumdis, but outside it's a very nice shtickle. Okay. No. There are two requirements to violate the Isser Bishul Akum that are discussed in the Gemara, and we paskin like both of them. In other words, Ne'achal kamo shehu chai, any food that is eaten ruah, there is no Bishul Akum on. The next issue is that there is only Bishul Akum on food which is Ola al Shulchan Malachim, food that is served on a king's table. Now, obviously, both of these categories we'll have to look into in greater detail, which is something that Rabbi Ganek did in the second shiur. In the first shiur, what Rabbi Ganek did, which is Gevaldik, he went through all of Hilchos Bishul Akum with the following Chakira. Yesh Lachgar, does Bishul Akum become a Cheftza of Iser or not? In other words, do I assume that Bishul Akum is only in Iser Machmas Gezeira, that the Iser is only because something might happen, but the food itself is not inherently Aser? Or does the food itself become inherently Aser? Avad, you can't eat it. But in Lomdus, is it a Cheftza Sho Iser? Maybe it's an Iser Gavra, not an Iser Cheftza. Ramay Nafgamino, well, there's a million Nafgaminas in Yoridea, Chaticha Ruya Liskabed, right, that if you have a really gishmak piece of Bishul Akum, right, can it be bottled technically? We only say Chaticha Ruya Liskabed if it's a Iser Cheftza, presumably. Okay, so this is the Lomdashe question that we start with. In Simin Kuf Yud Gimel, the last Sif, Tes Zayin, there is a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. This is on the last page of the Rabbi Ganek packets. Kuf Yud Gimel Tes Zayin. Kelim Shebishol Behem Ha'ovei Kochavim Lefaneinu Dvarim Sheyesh Bamishum Bishul Akum. If a guy cooks food in our pot, a guy takes a Jewish kosher pot and he cooks food, and the food is now usher based on Bishul Akum, do you have to kasher the pot? So Zakhtar Rabbi Ganek, this of course depends on the Hakira. If Bishul Akum is an Iser Cheftza, so it should impact on the pot, right? Then we'll say Tam Ke'ikr, that the pot becomes usher. But if Bishul Akum is not an Iser Cheftza, if it just remains an Iser Gavra, it's only an Iser because of the Gezeira, so then we could suggest that it does not need any Hechsher at all. Lahalacha, we are Machmir on this Shaila. Right? We're Machmir that Bishul Akum pots require Hechsher Kalim. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, however, apparently once mentioned that b'shas hadchak, there might be room to follow the other opinion in Shulchan Aruch. Both opinions are quoted in Shulchan Aruch, whether the pot needs hechsher or not. It's a machlokas v'halacha between the Rashba and the Ra'ah. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik on one occasion mentioned that he felt there might be room l'hako b'shas hadchak. I saw in this sefer on Bishul Akum, this is very good, the Chokas Binyamin, so he quotes from the Kaf HaChayim that if you have a pot that can't become kosher, it's impossible to kosher the pot, whatever the reason. Cheres can be koshered in this situation. We paskin, according to both opinions, Hagola Gimel Pamim helps, since it's only an Issa D'Rabbanon, Sheinel Ikrimin HaTayra. But let's say you have a pot that, for whatever reason, can't become koshered. Can you rely on the other opinion? So he quotes from the Kaf HaChayim that Yesh Lodon Bezeh. My impression is that that would be the type of case that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was talking about, that b'shas hadchak there's room to follow the other opinion in Shulchan Aruch. Zakhtar Abaganek, that maybe we could take this Chakira and plug it back into the 2 days of Rashi. If the Isser of Bishul Akum is Shema Yachilenu Davar Tameh, so presumably what we're saying is that every case of Bishul Akum is a chshash that there's a Davar Tameh there. That should mean that it's a Cheftza of Isser. But if the din of Bishul Akum is just Mishum Chasnus, it's just a Gezeira that maybe you'll marry Mrs. Luigi's daughter, or Mr. Luigi's daughter, so the Kahai Gavna, you could say it's not a Cheftza Sho Isser and it won't become Aser, right? So the 2 days in Rashi, the steer in Rashi, Taisus points out, might be Talay in this Macholkas Rash Bara'ah, whether the pot needs Hechsher. But Rabbi Ganek,
First, the Shemech and the Davar Tameh, the whole thing doesn't become Chetzah Shel Iser. The one thing in there may be Aser, may Aser everything else.
No, but Chazal are worried that if a guy cooks food, maybe there'll be Davar Tameh in there. That means Midrabbanon, I treat it like there's a Davar Tameh there. So Midrabbanon, I'm treating it like a Chetzah Shel Iser. But if the concern is Mishum Chasnus, it's harder to say that the food is Mamish Right, if chafter shal iser.
Wouldn't
the bishul created? No, well, again, the iser of bishul akum is only if there's a former active bishul. Okay, fine. When there's bishul akum, what happens? Yeah.
I mean, even if the reason Shami Achim and Dabar Tame, you're standing over the goddess and there's no Bishul Atom, so he's not going to be Machim and Dabar Tame. See, obviously, there is Bishul Atom because it's, you know, Shami Achim and Dabar Tame, even in that person to report.
So, again, this takes us back to that rubbing the time against the Ravid. But the point is, in cases that I'm choshish, shemi yachlo and davar tameh, so then it becomes a chetzer shor iser. Or in cases a chazal asked bishul akum, one could say became a
davar tameh. Internationally,
it doesn't necessarily mean it, but means a chazal are concerned about it. Again, in lomdis, I think what Rabbi Ganek suggested is that in lomdis, the daya in Rashi that Shami Yachlin the Dover Tame sounds more like it's an Isser Chefza, and the other daya sounds more like it's an Isser Gavra. Right? Is it airtight? No, it's not airtight. But in Lomdis, it's. You're inclined to say this way. What Rabbi Ganak then suggested is that maybe within Rashi you could say that there's a difference between the Sibas Ha Isser and the Geder Ha Isser. That the reason why Chazal instituted the Isser of Bishul Akum is because they're worried Mishum Chasnus. But once they instituted it, it became a concern of Shami Yachil and the Dover Tameh, it became a Cheftesho Isser. You could say it like that. Now, why does Rabbi Ganak make a big deal about this? He makes a big deal about this because Rabbi Ganak assumes that this is one of the huge differences between Bishul Akum and Pasakum. Remember, there are two different categories. There's food, which is like meat and chicken and cheese, stuff that's cooked. Right? And then there's bread. Bread is a different category. And Pasakum, you get the impression that Pasakum is not going to be a Chafter Shal Isser by any stretch. By Bishul Akum, 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, whether it asers the pot. But by Pasakum, everyone left over would assume that it does not aser. What's the raya? So Rabbi Ganak brought a raya from Simon Kuf Yud Beis, that's a Simon of Pas Akum, Sif Tesvav. Misha Nizhar mi Pas Ovid Kochab, and Mutar Lacha Bekaira, and Misha Eino Nizhar mi Menu. I'm worried about Pas Akum, you're not worried about Pas Akum. We're allowed to eat together. Eating Bekaira means that there's like hot food over here, and we're all dipping our bread into the hot food. But 1 second, you dip the bread into the hot food, how can I eat with you? Shouldn't I be worried that that hot food now became usser because your bread is treif for me, your treif bread infused time into that hot dressing, whatever you have here. So apparently, we're not worried. Apparently, we're going to say that no, by Pas Akum, there's no din of time ke'ikr. Why would there be no din of time ke'ikr? Because Pas Akum is not a Cheftah Shal Isser. It's not a Cheftah Shal Isser, so there's no Tam Ke'ikr. That's the first argument. The second argument that Rabbi Ganak has is the Ramah in that Sif, in Kuf Yud Beis Sif Tesvav. Ramah says that Mishum Eva, right? Let's say I am in a place and you're eating Pas Akum and not eating Pas Akum. So Mishum Eiva, the Ramah gives you a kula that you're allowed to eat the Pas Akum with the guy. If the guy's going to get really upset, he'll get angry at you or something, it's mutter to eat it. How could it be mutter? If it's Mamish and Isser, how could it be mutter? Doesn't make sense. Answer, no. If you hold the Pas Akum, it's not Mamish and Isser. Pas Akum is it's not a Cheftesho Isser, it's a Isser Gavra, so to speak. It's a Gezeira. So you could say that the Gezeira wasn't enforced if it conflicts with, right, the concern Mishum Eva. That's the way we could understand this Ramon Sif in Kuf Yud Beis Sif Tesvav as well. Based on this, Rabbi Ganak said, we can understand the biggest difference between Pas Akum and Bishul Akum, Hashlochas Kisim. Right, if a Jew just throws one match into the fire, so by Bishul Akum, right, the Mechaber is Machmir. The Hashlochas Kisim does not help. Kuf Yud Beis Sif Zayin, Kuf Yud Gimel Sif Zayin, Bishalakum Hashlochas Kisim does not help according to Sfaradim. According to Ashkenazim, it does help, but for Sfaradim it doesn't help. But even for Sfaradim, Hashlochas Kisim helps by Pas Akum. What's the Cheshbin? Why would Hashlochas Kisim help? So if you read the Rambam says that the Lomdus of Hashlochas Kisim, how does it help? You throw one match into the fire, what does that do? So the Rambam says, oh, you know what it does? It creates a hecker. It will remind you not to, what? Not to marry his daughter. So, if the Isser is only a Gezerah, if it's only an Isser Gavra, so you could say, well, the Isser Gavra will relax the Makom, this hecker of Hashlachas Kisim. So by Pas, we understand we relax it, because Pas is an Isser Gavra. But when it comes to Bishalakum, the Mechaber does not relax the Isser, right, B'makom Hashlachas Kisim, because there's no hecker. Hecker doesn't help. If it's an Isser Cheftza, the hecker doesn't help at all. That's the way Rabbi Ginnick put this together. So far, so good? Apparently, by Pas. So apparently by Pas Akum, the Lomdus would be that people don't often put treif ingredients into bread. It's much more likely to put treif ingredients into food.
So there's no reason
to make it a Chafetz Shal Isser, Chazal never made it a Chafetz Shal Isser by Pas Akum. But by Bishul Akum, they made it a Chafetz Shal Isser. Now, Rabbi Shimon Schwab here in the neighborhood, I had a hashgacha called Breuer's, K-H-A, right? And Breuer's hashgacha always insisted that sardines be Bishul Yisrael, not Bishul Akum. Now, Bishul Yisrael, of course, Bishul, right? Bishul Yisrael. Why Bishul Yisrael? Sardines? Is sardines Ola al Shulchan Malachim? Right? We said one of the qualifications of Bishul Akum is it has to be something that a king would eat. So the reason why Rabbi Schwab was machmer in this is because Rabbi Schwab one time visited the Chazon Ish and he asked the Chazon Ish whether sardines have to be Bishul Yisrael. And the Chazon Ish says, of course they have to be Bishul Yisrael. Because what do you think the King of England eats for breakfast? He eats sardines. Okay, so it's Olah Shulcha Malachim. Rav Soloveitchik disagreed. Rav Soloveitchik felt that the issue that sardines does not require Bishul Yisrael because it's not Olah Shulchan Malachim, because the Rav understood that the definition of Shulchan Malachim is not what the king eats for breakfast. The definition of Shulchan Malachim is what is served at a state dinner. No one will serve you canned sardines at a state dinner. It'll be done in a few minutes. There's not much more to go. No one would serve canned sardines at a state dinner. Now, this issue, Rav Aaron Cutler apparently said that they were makel about this in Lakewood. Rabbi Heinemann quotes Rav Aaron Cutler said that in Lakewood they were always makel on this issue. He was makel on the tuna fish because tuna is not served on at state dinners. Okay, whatever it is. Zok Rabbi Ginnick, this question also might depend on the Chakira. Because if Bishul Akum is a Chafetz Shal Isser, so you could say that they aser everything. Right? They answer everything that might be Olah Shulchan Malachim. However, if it's just a Gezeira Mishum Chasnus, what does that mean, that's a Gezeira Mishum Chasnus? That means that the concern is that through this food, you're going to come to marry Mrs. Luigi's daughter. It's much more likely that they make the Gezeira that you'll marry Mrs. Luigi's daughter if it's food that's presented in a fancy way, like at a state dinner. But food that the king eats for breakfast, that's unlikely that that would get people to, right, marry the daughter. So if it's just a gezeira, you could hear that it should be, right, that should not be a problem. And the next issue that comes up that Rabbi Ginnick suggested is that Taisus and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis in Avodah Zarah questions whether beer is prohibited based on Bishul Akum. Beer should maybe be prohibited. So Taisus has 2 days. One day in Taisus is the famous day that since it's bottle inyan bracha, since you make a shahakal on beer, you don't make a mizonos on beer. So that's why there's no Isser Bishul Akum. But there's a second day in Taisus. Second day in Taisus says, oh, beer, there's no Bishul Akum because it's not Ola al Shulchan Malachim. What do you mean it's not Ola al Shulchan Malachim? Trust me. George W. Bush drinks beer. Right? We know he drinks beer, right? He was eating a pretzel and he almost choked and he was drinking a beer at the same time. Right? We know George Bush drinks beer. So, Lamaisa, right, he drinks beer. So how's it not all Shulchan Aruch? And Torah says you don't give beer at a state dinner. So that day in Taisus that says that beer is not all our Shulchan Malachim is assuming that the Haggadah is based on what's a state dinner. And according to the Lamdas that Rabbi Ganach set forth, this should be totally in the 2 days in Rashi into whether it's a Gezeira or whether it becomes an Isser Chefza. Okay, just a few other points now to move on to the second Rabbi Ganach shir, but it'll go fairly quickly. A few other points within these Haggadahs. Right, the kula is a bishul akum. Olal shulchan malachim, right, is the only thing that's aser, and the other thing that's aser is it has to be something that is not nechal kamo shulchai. If it's eaten ruah, then there's no iser of bishul akum. So now, the first question that comes up in Rishonim is machlokas Rashba and Ritva, is if you read the Gemara doesn't just say it has to be something that's olal Shulchan Malachim. The Gemara has a full lashon. It's Olah Shulchan Malachim Lafeis Bo Sapas. Now the Isser Bishakim is only food that kind of adds flavor to bread. So the Shaila is, what about something that does not add flavor to bread? What about something that itself is a main course? Is there Bishakim on it? On rice? On orez? Is there Bishakim? So the Poskim, of course, say, right, that this is Machlokas Rashba and Ritva, but in Shulchan Aruch or Machmir on this question, that there is Bishakim on food, even if it's not melafis as hapas, providing if it's the type of food shemazamnin olav, providing if it's the type of food that you'd invite a guest over for, you'd say, come over, I'll give you some rice. So if that's the case, then there would be bishul akum. Within the next question of nechal kamosha huchai, something that's eaten ruah, so there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch about nechal kamosha huchai ayidei hadchak. Let's say it's something, and Rabbi Belsky in the OU Shavuos of Tshuvas, page 7, very important tshuva, about corn. Does canned corn have to require Bishul Yisrael? Now, the issue over here is that you can eat corn when it is ruah. Some people apparently do eat corn when it's ruah. So if that's the case, do I assume that because some people do it, that that's considered Nechal Kemosha Hu Chai? The OU is makel on this now. The OU assumes that as long as some people eat it ruah, it's considered Nechal Kemosha Hu Chai. Rabbi Schechter was bothered when Rabbi Belsky first came out with this kula. What do you mean? If some people eat it ruah, but most people don't eat it ruah. And it says in Shulchan Aruch that if something is Nechal Ayidei Hadchak, right, that's in Kuf Yud Gimel Sif Yud Beis. So that's Necha Al Yidei HaDechak, so then that doesn't help for Bishul Akum. So Rabbi Belsky responded, he said, no, Rabbi Shechter, you're misunderstanding what Necha, the whole back and forth is in that packet. Necha Al Yidei HaDechak, so Rabbi Belsky means something that is Mo'os or Kosha Le'echol. It's either very hard to eat or it's disgusting for some reason. That's considered Necha Al Yidei HaDechak. That does not help for Bishul Akum. But corn is perfectly tasty, apparently, when it's raw. Someone tried it in the OU office. Corn tastes just great. Most people don't eat corn when it's raw. Why? I'm not sure. Right? But since it's perfectly tasty, it's not kasha, and it's not ma'os, no one would say it's yach about eating raw corn. So lamaisa, we are mako on the corn. Then the issues come up, what about different medinos, different places, palm hearts? That was a big shout on the OU. Apparently, palm hearts that we get all come from Brazil. In Brazil, people eat raw palm hearts. So do I assume that since the palm hearts are cooked in Brazil where they pick them, and in Brazil people eat them raw, so therefore there is no iser of Bishul Akum. So that's what we assume, that there's no iser in Bishul Akum. Since in the makom that it's cooked, it is nechal kamosha uchai, so that's why there is no iser. There is a question about what about the other criteria. Let's say it would be something that's not olah shulchan malachim where it's cooked. That's a more complicated shaila. That was machlokas Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Belsky. But if it's nechal kamo shehu chai, there's a difference. What's the chiluk? between Nechel Kmo Shulchai and Oral Shulchan Malachim. Nechel Kmo Shulchai is a din in the food itself. If the food is raw, that's not considered bishul on the food. Oral Shulchan Malachim is a din in the presentation. Maybe this goes back to the first year, you think about it, the first year of Rabbi Ganach. Maybe not. You could read that discussion in Rabbi Belsky. Let's just go on three more points. This machloikas that we already mentioned about, right, Mechaber Ramah, does a kissim help for Bishul Akum, throwing in that one match? So by Pas Akum, it definitely helps. By Bishul Akum, does it help or not? Machloikas Mechaber Ramah. What's the lumdus of the machloikas? So we already had one approach to it. But there's another way of saying it. The other way of saying the question of whether the kissim helps is that it could be that when I throw a kissim in, the entire fire becomes attributed to the Jew. It's not just we said, like we said before, that the kissim is a hecker, but no, once I throw that one match in, that means it's now a Jewish fire, and now it's Bishul Yisrael. If that's the case, that now it's Bishul Yisrael, so then the OU had a few issues that came up. One issue is the Rabbi Heinemann light bulb. The Star K has a big quota for Bishul Akum. That what they have in their ovens is they have a regular oven, and there's a special heat-resistant light bulb that's screwed in by the Mashgiach and will stay on for like 20 years, 30 years on these long-lasting light bulbs. And the light bulb gives off a little bit of heat. So they say, well, that should help, because now it's like a kissim. It's like the Jew is doing something. But Rabbi Schechter and the OU don't like this. The OU assumes that no, that those light bulbs don't help for Bishul Akum. Because if the lumdus of the kissim is that it becomes the Jew's fire, that is only mistaber if it's integrated with the actual fire that you have. But if you have a fire and you have a light bulb on the side of it, it doesn't integrate mistaber, then that won't help. Rav El Yoshev was maskim to Rav Schechter on this issue. As far as I know, the Star case still makel on it, however, with the light bulbs. The question about Sfaradim eating in the cafeteria of yeshiva is a question that apparently was dealt with by Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, right? The cafeteria relies on Hashlochas Kisim, right? Each Jew just does one small thing. For the Mechaber L'Chayra, that should not help. What's the heter for Sfaradim to eat in the cafeteria? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that his father, Rav Moshe, dealt with this shiloh many years ago. Rav Moshe's lived in 1941, and he came up with a kula, but Rav Aaron didn't remember the kula. But we have Chacham of Yosef has a chuvin yichav das chila kesem in invalid, where he's mekel based on the tzir of hashitos. You have the raiva that the basal shei Yisrael is okay. You have the fact that in Eretz Yisrael, many of the people who cook are Arabs, who are not over the avodah zarah, so maybe there's no b'shakam over there. That's a whole other shir. And you have the fact that you can rely on Hashlochas Kisim for Ashkenazim. So you put everything together, so maybe it should help. There is a big discussion about whether a Jew does a Maisa, this one act of stirring, does it have to be done before the food reaches Macho Ben Drusai, before it's a third cooked, or even if it's after a third cooked. The Mechaber in one place in Kufyud Beis Siftes is Machmir, that it only helps before it's cooked Macho Ben Shusai. It could be that there's a chalak between Hashlochas Kisim and real stirring in this regard. That's an issue that Rabbi Ganach raised. Maybe real stirring is mamish like Bishul Yisrael, so that would help Hashlochas Kisim. However, is the question whether it's mamish Bishul Yisrael. The last issues that came up are the issues of tuna fish. Tuna fish is, of course, the big cause celeb, right? In the yeshiva world today, it's becoming very popular not to eat OU tuna fish, because the OU has a few kulas on the tuna fish. One is the kula regarding the Bishul Akum. Now, tuna is cooked twice. Right? One could say that the tuna itself, why should there be Bishul Akum? It's not Olal Shulchan Malachim, right? Canned tuna, what would be? Right? No one gives a can of tuna at a steak dinner. And if we're right about the sardines, so we should be right about the tuna also, that it's not Olal Shulchan Malachim. But apparently the way tuna is cooked is that they first cook the entire fish out as one big unit, all the way in the boat or something, or right when it comes off the boat, they cook the whole fish. At that point, it is Olal Shulchan Malachim. It's a real big geshmak of fish. Someone would eat it. So it could be that it would be usher out the Olal Shulchan Malachim. The fact they put in the can later might not be mafkiya the isser from it. So what's the heter for tuna fish? So So the heter for tuna fish is a fewfold. One heter is that the way tuna fish is cooked is through ma'ushan. Now, what is ma'ushan? Is ma'ushan smoking or steaming? Smoking is a cold process, that they just have like some smoke in the room, and that somehow cures the meat or the fish. Apparently, that's what they do to Norwegian salmon. American lox is fake, right? So it's not smoked. What they do is they cook it, and then they inject it with some steam. It's not purely smoked. It says in Shulchan Aruch that ma'ushan is a suffix in Yerushalmi, whether there's an Isser Bishul Akum or ma'ushan. And because Bishul Akum is an Isser Rabbanon, it's a suffix Rabbanon l'hakel. The shaila is, what are we talking about? Are we talking about smoking or steaming? In industry today, most food is cooked through steam. If ma'ushan means through steam itself, that you, when you shoot hot steam at the stuff, and that's why you cook stuff in the can. You have a can, and you shoot hot steam at it, and it cooks. So if that's what ma'ushan means, through the steam, and there's a prishan, Simon Pei Zayin, who says that that's what ma'ushan is, so you could have a kula. Rabbi Ganek asked this to Revel Yashiv once. Revel Yashiv said no dice. He didn't feel that you could rely on this prisha. So what's the heter for the tuna fish? Outside Bishul Akum. So we have a few heterim. First of all, maybe it's not Olah Shulchan Malachim, possibly not. Yesh La'ayin, ma'ushan, still a suffix. But there's also something else that is known, that Reb Moshe Feinstein was makel, very big kula. Reb Moshe said that even though, like Pas Akum, let's take Pas, there's a difference between Pas Akum Mamish and Pas Palter. Pas Akum is bread that a guy, an individual guy, Luigi, cooks in his own house, right? But Pas Palter is bread that a baker bakes, right? A baker, you don't have contact with him in the same intimate sort of way, but you do have commercial contact with him. Reb Moshe has a kula, which he said they used to rely on in Europe, that if you have a super palter, you have not a local baker, but you have a giant factory, and you'll never come in contact with the guy who makes the food, so it could be b'kahai gafna, there's no iser bishul akum at all. Since this stuff is cooked so far away, what are the chances of you meeting this guy's daughter? Right? It's a factor. You don't know who the guy was before. So it could be that that's the heter for the tuna fish. They put all of these kulas together. There's other discussions that Rabbi Ganek mentioned in passing about microwaves, whether there's bishul akum. That might depend on whether a microwave is bishul menatayra or not. But I think we got through Rabbi Ganek's share. Okay. Any questions or... I'm sorry for going a little bit over time. I just wanted to be mashed. Yes, I have one.